and welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. The Cardiac Cavs strike again, moving to 8-1 on the season, the Virginia's best start since 1990, 35 years ago, getting the win out west, 31-21 over Cal. My guest today to talk about all of it, a little bit of a crossover episode here on the Sabre Podcast Network. I've got Michael McGraw, co-host of the Preferred Walk-Ons Podcast. You can hear his stuff every week over there. Wherever you find your podcast, you can also read some of his stuff over at thesabre.com as we've been getting ready for basketball season. But it doesn't feel like basketball season, Michael, because it's like we're so locked into this football season right now, especially with the way the results have been going.
Yeah, I heard what you said in your last episode about, you know, usually this is the time where UVA fans are already discounting football season and they've moved to basketball season. And it's wild that it is starting tomorrow. Feels kind of uneventful at this point, even though you've got a new coach, a new lineup of players, a lot of excitement around that program, but things going so well for the football team, kind of unprecedented territory for a lot of UVA fans that are alive right now. So got to stay with football as long as things are going well.
Hey man, it's a good time to be a Cavalier right now. You know, football's going well, basketball season, a lot of excitement around that. You know, I did my usual fall baseball this year, and people really aren't ready for fall baseball right now.
like
keep that in the spring. But let's get into this one. UVA winning out west, like I said, 31-21 at Cal. The first ever win in the Pacific time zone. How about that? First in four attempts, I believe. Also now 5-0 in ACC play for the first time ever. First seven-game win streak since 2007. Obviously, a lot of parallels to that season with the way results are going right now, you know, the cardiac Cavs factor. But, Michael, let's start off with your one big take after this win for UVA out in California.
I think at a macro level, my biggest take is just that it is possible to win football games at UVA. And I think that was really in question from a lot of fans' perspective. You've seen the attendance. People online talk about attendance all the time. Attendance is going up. A student attendance has been at its highest level ever. And I think there is a lot of excitement around this program and a lot of the NIL changes, transfer portal stuff, everything going on in the college football world. I think there was a lot of questions about whether this was possible and whether Tony Elliott specifically could win football games and specifically close football games. And I think just at a macro level, the answer is yes. It is possible for UVA to win games. It is possible to believe, even if all along the way you are stressed out as a UVA fan and things are, you know, just by the skin of their teeth half the time, it is possible to win. But I think, you know, going into more specifically this game against Cal, I think this was a really solid effort on both sides of the ball. And, you know, given what UVA's offense has looked like the last few games, I think they needed a little bit better execution. They needed a little bit better play from Chandler Morris. And I think there were a lot of questions. You know, I certainly had questions about whether they had just kind of hit their peak early in the season. And this game wasn't a perfect game. It wasn't perfect execution. They had plenty of opportunities to score, which I'm sure we'll talk about, that they didn't execute on. But they got, you know, solid production from their offense, solid production from their running game. Chandler Morris was really solid. And then the defense made plays. Their defense has gotten better as the season's gone on and made a lot of plays to win games, finish games. And even if it stresses you out all along the way, they found a way to win those close games.
Yeah, my thing is, they found a way. Like, this is the prototypical trap game for a lot of these, you know, teams that are just kind of fresh on the scene, that, you know, kind of get a little bit of momentum in their program. They start on the rise and, you know, then something kind of falls off and, you know, they kind of see a little backslide towards the end of the season. This game at Cal, I mean, heck, I think it was the ACC huddle show. They all picked, not that I could watch that, you know, with the YouTube TV problems. That's a different topic for a different day, but I think they all picked Cal. A lot of people were picking Cal as kind of the trendy upset pick this week, for a 15th ranked UVA team that had been really struggling on the offensive side of the ball for the last three games in a row now. But they found a way, and Tony Elliott like said it afterwards. Everyone keeps talking about the cardiac Cavs and all that, but it's just this team has a mindset right now that it's almost comforting. It feels like you're on the edge of your seat every time you're watching this team right now. You know, I loved how you put it in our text the other day. Just like you just come out of this like comatose state of like what just happened to me just now. like it feels like that for the fans, but I gotta say, like watching it from partly a media perspective, but seeing this team throughout the year, like there's a comfortability in those moments for this team that, golly, when's the last time you could say that for a Virginia football team that like you're going into these moments like towards the end of the game, it's 24-21. You know, Tony Elliott's got to make a decision there on fourth down, whether to go for it in the red zone or kick a field goal. There was a comfortability of like, even if we don't get this, like we're still in a good spot. And then, you know, obviously what happens next. But it seems like they're comfortable in, to use a Bronco Mendenhall quote, you know, comfortable in the uncomfortable. And that's just kind of where this team is living right now with these, you know, crazy close, bizarro ways to win football games as of late. I mean, I know this one's not going to go down as a close win at the end because they win by 10. I think someone had a, you know, the craziest backdoor cover that you've seen for this Virginia team this year. Yeah, Cam Robinson getting the pick six where, you know, some coaches would have said go down in that situation to run out the clock. I think Tony Elliott even admitted as much after the game. He was like, "Oh, at some point, I'll have a talk with Cam Robinson about, you know, what we should do in that time and place." But, you know, you can't stop a guy's momentum like that. But yeah, it's these close wins, it seems like they continue every week as they get another one more comfortable in them.
There definitely is kind of a monkey's paw situation here for UVA fans where, I think a lot of UVA fans were like, please, let's just have a season where we're relevant and that we can play in these meaningful games. And we've got that. This is the flip side of it. The flip side is that you get three straight games where you've won by a combined 6 points. But, I think it was important, to your point about the comfort that Tony Elliott has, I don't think he would go for fourth down and two in that situation if he didn't have the comfort in his defense, knowing that they could make a play, that they had really held Cal from running the ball almost the entire game, and that they had made plays, they had made interceptions at the end of the UNC game to force overtime, make plays at the goal line in the UNC game to win. You get a safety against Washington State to clinch that game. I don't think he goes for that there without knowing that he has a lot of confidence in what's happening on the back end of that and knowing that they're going to get a stop, and they reward him on the very first play.
Yeah. Let's get into the who's on player of the game now. For the third time this season, it's Cam Robinson, and it was a runaway pick. Cam Robinson obviously seals this one with a 35-yard pick six. Interesting fact, he is only the second player in UVA history with multiple pick sixes in a single season. Previously, Randy Neal had done it twice in two separate seasons. So that's the only other guy to do that. So, you know, we're breaking all kinds of UVA history this year. One interesting thing that I found today to kind of put into context Cam Robinson's season so far, because he missed the first three games of the season. He still ranks second in the ACC in tackles per game. He leads Virginia in tackles with 54 on the season, and he is one of only two players in the country with 54 tackles, two or more sacks, and two or more interceptions. It seems like a pretty shut and closed case. Cam Robinson's really good at football.
Yeah, I mean, he's extremely athletic, extremely, he just every week it seems like he makes some kind of big play, but he also makes a lot of the little plays, some of the pressures that he put on JKS to kind of force him to step up in the pocket in this game. They don't go down necessarily as a sack or a tackle for a loss or anything like that, but just making those plays, I think, opens up the defense for everybody else to get pressure on the quarterback. You have to acknowledge the fact that he's a good pass rusher, but then, as he showed at the very end of the game, also capable of dropping into coverage, making interceptions, taking it to the house. In a lot of ways, I'm not the first person to make this comparison, but Ahmad Brooks is somebody that comes to mind. Not exactly the same player. Ahmad Brooks definitely a little bit bigger than Cam is, but just in terms of athleticism, in terms of making plays, and when Cam Robinson jumped on the scene as a freshman and made 12 tackles in a game and tied Ahmad Brooks, it was kind of like that wow moment. And he's had these injuries that he's battled, at the beginning of this season. You could argue that UVA maybe wins the NC State game if he's there. But I mean, he's such a critical part of everything that the defense does for Virginia, and it's just a lot of fun to watch. I mean, he's just all over the place. They use him in a lot of different ways, and he's definitely the best player probably on the entire roster, but certainly on the UVA defense.
I know that there'll probably be other players with better numbers at the end of the season because he missed three games. But at this point, I don't know if you're an ACC voter, if Virginia kind of keeps up the success that they've been having this year, how you keep him off like first team all ACC. Like, no player on defense has made a bigger impact in this conference than Cam Robinson. We've seen the examples. You talk about that NC State game. It is a night and day difference from UVA's defense with Cam Robinson and UVA's defense without Cam Robinson, and just the plays that he's made. I mean, we'll talk about some of the clutch plays his defense has made this season, but you know, he's got two pick sixes on his record resume already, and he has a game-winning safety. Show me the other player in the college football that has a game-winning safety, much less two pick sixes on top of that. He's the only Power Four player with two pick sixes this year. So, yep. How many more flowers could you throw the guy? He's the th a three time now who's on player of the game. Definitely deserving. So, let's get into the offense now because this was the big question mark coming into the week, Michael. You know, so many questions and, you know, people talking about Chandler Morris's injury history, Des Kitching's ability as a play caller, the offensive line. Are they healthy? Are they not? Do they have chemistry? Are they actually good? Have they regressed? So many questions coming into this week for the offense. And I thought overall this was a good response. I kind of put it coming into the Cal game, I was like, this is going to show us a lot about who this offense is because if they can't put up some kind of, you know, presentable showing, then I'm going to sound the alarm bell. Going into this, I was slightly worried about the trend, but I think they did enough to kind of make it so like there's no panic now. It looks like the offense is trending back in a positive direction. 456 total yards. That's the most since the Stanford game. There's some missed opportunities here and there, but overall, a good showing.
Yeah, I thought they were really solid. Definitely a better job of running the ball in this game and establishing that earlier than we've seen the last few weeks. Definitely a struggle for them against North Carolina. And then this game, 194 yards on the ground. You know, that was a big response. And, you know, we're going to talk about Chandler Morris as well. I thought he was really solid with his decision making, you know, avoided any of the big mistakes that can really cost you a game on the road. But I think the offensive line has really been kind of the focal point for me because they've been injured all season. They were injured coming into the season. You know, I remember asking Des Kitchings about it in an August media availability, and he was already lamenting then about how he wasn't able to have everybody that he wanted there. And it's kind of gotten worse since then, and certainly been a problem the last few games. In this game, I thought they held up and definitely responded. I mean, wasn't perfect, still gave up a couple of sacks, but you could see that they actually got a little bit of push on the offensive line, which really opened things up for Jamari Taylor, specifically on his big touchdown run. It gave Chandler Morris a little bit more time in the pocket. He just looked calmer overall and not as jumpy, wasn't moving around quite as much as in the North Carolina game. So I think that was really the biggest difference for me is that the offensive line, you know, it's still a big question mark, I think, you know, especially going into these last three games. And, you know, if UVA is fortunate enough to make the ACC championship, that will be a big question mark there as well. But I think it was a really solid response from them and the offense generally, and it is a really tough game in a tough environment.
Yeah, in the biggest games this season, this offensive line has shown up and played pretty well. I mean, that Florida State game, the effort that they had that day, I always go back to that, you know, drive where, you know, Chandler Morris injures his hand and, you know, they're going 10 straight pl run plays after that. Like, that was the kind of, you know, that's where like the offensive line peaks out right there. But this one, I think they graded out really well pass blocking wise, and you know, they got the run game reestablished again. And my big thing with the offense is there's so many nuances to it. It wasn't one thing. Everyone wanted to look for that one thing that they could point to and kind of hold up as like, this is the reason. There was a lot of different reasons. And I think one of them was like the lack of rhythm. And so for them on the very first drive of the game to go down and score the football, that was huge for this offense and their confidence just kind of going forward for the rest of the game. And I think, you know, when they had to have some of those tough drives like they have been having to have like the last few weeks, they were able to, you know, kind of respond and do that again with Eli Wood getting a rushing touchdown of all things. And so I think it was a good, like you said, the offensive line. respond in a big way. I'm still interested to see, like, is it maybe just like they kind of have to rebuild the chemistry a little bit since Brady Wilson was out and Drake Metcalf got moved around. I know Ben York got injured this one. I think Tony Elliott said that he should be okay. But he's a huge one for them because he plays that six offensive lineman role that comes in off the bench. Also, if anything happens to Mikhail Boley or anything happens to Jack Whitmer, he's the guy that comes in there. So yeah, I think it was a good step for the offensive line. Before we get to Chandler Morse, I want to start with Jamari Taylor, give him his flowers because 21 carries for 105 yards, 5 yards per carry, two touchdowns. It was his first multi-touchdown game since the NC State game. First hundred, only the second time this year he's gone over 100 yards. The other one was in that NC State game. So he's had 200-yard games this season. UVA running backs in Tony Elliott's first 3 seasons, just 3 times have they gone over 100 yards. Do you care to guess who those three guys were?
Oh, geez. Putting me on the spot. Man, I don't know.
I'm trying to remember here with you. I know a couple off the top of my head.
All right, well, go ahead and enlighten me on this one. I'm
So
blanking.
his first season, first game, there is a former walk-on running back who went over the 100-yard mark. He was actually one of 2 100-yard rushers in that game. The other one was Brennan Armstrong, and this one was Paris Jones.
Paris Jones, man.
So that's one. Last year, there was a guy that went off down at Myrtle Beach. If you remember that game,
Was that the Xavier Brown game?
that was the
Yep.
Xavier Brown
Yeah.
game. And the third one, who was the third one? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. This is great podcasting right here, is asking a question and not knowing the full answer. I knew those two off the top of my head. I am gonna say maybe there's another Paris Jones game. But let's talk about Jamari Taylor a little bit more because it was a tremendous effort by him. Really strong running in this game. 5 yards per carry. Had another, some other good short yardage carries in this one. Two touchdowns. Good to see him back in the end zone. He's got 11 touchdowns now, which he's the first running back for UVA to go over 10 plus rushing touchdowns in the season since Wayne Talapapa back in 2019. And I'm sure he's got a few more left in the season, but good to see Jamari Taylor back on the score sheet like that.
Yeah, still second in rushing touchdowns in the ACC as well. One thing that I don't think he gets enough credit for is that he's a really good blocker, a really good pass blocker. And sometimes when your offensive line is struggling, you really need to put your running backs in there and chip somebody. I think he was the one that was in there on the first Eli Wood completion down the field that set up one of UVA's scores. And picked up a blitz there and allowed Chandler Morris to have enough time to make that pass down the field. And I think that's really, a big addition to his game. I think that was something that, coming from a lower level school in the FCS, that was a question mark about whether he could pass block. And he's absolutely shown that, in addition to being able to make explosive runs and also, just those grind it out, get a first down, direct snap kind of plays that have been so integral to UVA's third down conversion rate, and also being able to punch it in the end zone on those big plays. So yeah, he's done a little bit of everything this year, and given that they've had some injuries, Xavier Brown going down with a knee injury, it's going to be, I think, Jamari Taylor for the rest of the season, as much as he can handle.
Is there a running back in recent UVA history that you felt more comfortable in those short yardage situations with? I couldn't come up with that on top of my
No.
head. I mean, Jordan Ellis had some good runs in there, but I mean, like Keith Payne.
Wally Lundy is the one that pops into my head,
He's
but it's
the
a little
like
bit.
gold standard for this, like in the 2000s on. I think Wally Lundy is kind of like the go-to guy there.
A little bit further away for the younger audience listening to this, but yeah, I mean, the fact that they can run that play, and now almost everybody, if anybody's seen tape, able to point it out to my friends watching the game, like, oh, this is going to be a direct snap, based on how they were lining up, and still being able to convert, almost every single time that they've done it is really impressive. And it gets to just the fact that he is a kind of a vicious downhill runner and willing to hit people and then continue to churn his legs and get that extra yard.
I maybe a handful of times this year can I remember him getting tackled by the first guy to hit him. He rarely goes down, usually finds a way to spin out and pick up at least some yardage. He doesn't get tackled in the backfield too often. It was Paris Jones, another Paris Jones rushing game. I looked it up. It was against William and Mary. So this year, Jamari Taylor's the first 200-yard games for Tony Elliott against Power Four opponents. Before that, it was Richmond, William and Mary, and Coastal Carolina. So, definitely some improvements continuing in the running game. Chandler Morris, that was a big question coming into this week, and I'm going to put it this way: Chandler Morris looks fine. Like, and that's not like, oh, it was fine. No, he looks fine. Like, stop worrying. I was talking about this beforehand. Like, the injury talk has gotten to the point of like conspiracy theory, like someone was saying like, oh, his arm was dangling before the game on like it was warming up. I'm like, guys, just take a break. Like, he looks fine out there. And I think last week he was jumpy, like you mentioned earlier, and the offensive line did not have a great week, but some of those sacks were on Chandler Morris. Just like, you know, he was trying to create something big down the field when just take the check down. In this game, I saw him take the check down a lot more, and that was great. Like, that's what you need to do. Early in the year, Virginia wasn't getting a ton of explosive plays. They were getting a lot of just kind of keep ahead of the chains and keep moving the ball down the field in those increments. And he made some incredible throws in this game, especially on third downs. Like, there's one to Cam Ross that comes to mind. My favorite throw of the day was the 38-yard pass to Eli Wood. That one was an absolute dime. Put it where only Eli Wood could get that ball. Some great throws, some great passes today. He doesn't end up with a touchdown because that play to Eli Woods a little too far behind him, but I thought overall it was a great performance by him, and he showed that he can still run when needed, like 6 carries for 38 yards, and a couple good ones in there too.
Yeah, to that last point first, I think, there were times yesterday where I actually was hoping that he would run a little bit more. I mean, we had gotten a little bit conservative and predictable at the end of the game and handing it off, which, makes sense. You're trying to get Cal to burn their timeouts. But, I think a couple of those, they were really crashing down hard. And if he had kept it or they'd done a design run, I think, maybe you get a few more yards. The quarterback draw that they had was a really great play call by Kitchings on their last drive that they had. And I'd like to see a little bit more of that. I mean, Morris wants to do that kind of stuff, I think. The third down conversion in the North Carolina overtime was a play that Morris had checked down to and just said, I'm going to go get this first down by myself. And I feel like, this is just me projecting. This is not something a coach has said, but I feel like there are moments where the coaching staff is probably, given how the season started with the shoulder injury, they're probably trying to protect him a little bit and don't want him to put himself out there at risk. But I thought he also did a really good job of sliding, getting down, avoiding contact, and get 38 yards on the ground, and then passing the ball. Again, I think he has this kind of he had this mentality or kind of reputation coming into the season that he was a little bit of a gunslinger and that he was going to try to make plays happen. I totally agree with you that he was, trying to make the big play happen and that resulted in holding on to the ball too long, too many sacks. This game, make your reads, make your progression, get the ball out on a swing pass or, dump it up over the middle or even just throw it away if it's not there. So I thought he played a really, really solid game. If you look at the QBR stats, QBR isn't the best end-all be-all stat for quarterbacks, but this was a game where he was 73.2 ranked in that, and kind of 50 is generally average for quarterbacks. The previous two games, he was at 17.1 against North Carolina and 90 or 39.3 against Washington State. So definitely some improvement. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that, his stability at quarterback is what helped UVA win this game.
Yeah, I think there were some calls for, switching to Daniel Kalen at multiple times during last week. And look, I think Chandler was the first to admit after that North Carolina game, like, he did not play his best football. And like, everyone else wants to throw out all these other excuses, and he was like, I just got to play better. And I think he came out this week, veteran 6-year quarterback that he is, and just played the game the way that he needed to. He made the big throws when he needed to, made the smart throws when he needed to. And another thing that you mentioned there with the progressions, like, there's multiple times where, a veteran quarterback, he moves on to his second, third, fourth progressions a lot quicker than a younger guy is going to do. And that's something that I think Virginia really needed in this game. Like, there's a few times they were running that underneath mesh route, that Virginia hit so many times this year, and it wasn't open because I think Cal did a good job game planning for it. Well, guess what? He hit the route going over top of that mesh route multiple times in this game, whether it was Trel Harris or Cam Ross, and those were the big third down plays that they were hitting on throughout this one. So a good performance to bounce back for him. Only other standout on offense I wanted to throw out there, because he doesn't get to be in this category very often, is Eli Wood. Two catches, 46 yards, and his first career rushing touchdown. How about that?
I was very surprised to see him get that catch in early in the game, and when I saw that, I was like, "Man, when was the last time he had a catch?" They said it on the broadcast that it was his fifth reception of the year, but what a time to get your fifth and sixth receptions and a rushing touchdown in this game. I mean, he really, Tony Elliott praised him after the game in his post-game press conference, but what an opportunity for him to step up, and you just keep grinding in practice and. At this point in the season, there are a lot of injuries. Cam Ross was out last week and back for this one. You need people to step up. And I think that's something that UVA has not had in previous years. They just haven't had enough depth. They've had some really talented players come through the program, but they don't have enough depth. And this season, you've seen that on the offensive line. You've seen that at receiver. You've seen that in the secondary. And it's really made a big difference in their success. So, really happy for Wood to step up in this game and kind of, have a coming out party on the road.
Ever since spring, all the way through, I mean, for years now, they've called him the glue of the wide receiver room. He's just one of those good guys that kind of makes everything come together. You mentioned the wide receiver depth. There's times out there where it was Eli Wood, because I think Tony Elliott said Trel Harris had some cramping problems, and so Wood got more playing time than he normally would have. But it was like Eli Wood, Dylan Newton Short. Someone texted me at one point, is like, who's 84? And I'm like, oh, that's Isaiah Robinson, the freshman. Shout out Trinity, my alma mater here in Richmond, another fellow Titan. But so they're using a lot of different guys. I think Jaden Thomas went down early in this one. Didn't really see him the rest of the way. So yeah, they had to go deep into the playbook today to get some of these guys out there. The defense, I mean, another clutch play. I kind of put a montage together over on Twitter if you want to go check that out. But I'm just going to list them off right here, Michael, if you're ready for it. Cam Robinson pick six at Cal. Corey Costner pick at Cal. Carnlene Brevard, the game-saving tackle on the two-point conversion at UNC. The Mitchell Melton wild tip pick interception at UNC. Cam Robinson safety at Wazoo. Jason Brevard, the pick against Wazoo that set up the game tying field goal. Cam Robinson's pick six at Louisville. Donovan Platt scoop and score at Louisville. Jason Brevard pick either of the interceptions against Florida State. Clutch play after clutch play. And I know there's other ones that I'm not even throwing in here. Like, this is just a rough list right here, but I don't know how this defense, like, we'd always talk about this defense being bend but don't break. But it's a different level when they're making plays like this in games like this.
Yeah, I mean, that has always been John Rudzinski's reputation is, let them get a bunch of yards, but we're going to make the plays ultimately to win the game. I think they have definitely improved as the season has gone on. I think it took them a little bit of time to kind of acclimate, figure out who can play what. They were, talking earlier in the year about playing a lot of different people, which they still have, but I think you're rotating a lot of players out there, and you just don't necessarily have the chemistry or the communication. That's something that Rudzinski talks about pretty much every time you have media availability with him. And I think that that's really developed with this team in critical moments as well. You said that earlier that, they feel very comfortable in those kind of moments. They've really been able to slam the door shut in this game against Cal, get the interception on the first play, the big play against North Carolina at the goal line, forcing fumbles. I think this is a team that is doing a lot more aggressive pressuring of the quarterback. They're making turnovers in a way that we haven't really seen from UVA's defense in the past few years. And they've needed it. I mean, they've needed the defense to step up in the last few games, and they definitely are playing some of their best football this season.
I mean, beyond that, I was looking it up. Jacob DeJesus was one of the top guys in receptions coming into the game. He ends up only getting two. He had a big one down the stretch, a long play there. But this team has done just yeoman's work out there. Week after week, they may not be put in the best positions out there, but they kind of come up with the play that matters the most. We talk about, they give up a lot of yards. The other team gets into the red zone from time to time, but they just find a way to kind of to make it work out there for this defense. And that, I want to make special point of the cornerbacks for this game. It was the first time this year that Donovan Platt didn't start at cornerback. They started Jordan Robinson and Emmanuel Carnley instead. And Robinson was a guy that I don't feel like it's talked a lot of, about a lot. He had a rough start to the season, and yeah, that's why he didn't start a ton of games. I think this was maybe one of his first starts since the Florida State game. But he had two really good pass breakups early in this game. So I mean, what I mean, this defense just it's crazy when you look at all these plays. Kind of back to back, and are like, oh man, that's like week after week after week of just like crazy plays. Like I thought the Jason Brevard interception, the tip pick six in the red zone, I was like, that's the craziest interception I've seen covering UVA. And then you get the Mitchell Melton one last week, or you get the Cam Robinson like game sealing pick six, like kind of walk off there against Cal. Yeah, it's just crazy seeing some of these plays that this defense has made this year. And they've also done it by getting pressure on the quarterback, which, I mean, that has been a problem for back-to-back seasons now for this defense. And now 23 sacks. They rank third in the ACC, 16th nationally with those 23 sacks. And it's come from a lot of different guys. 11 different players are credited with the sack this year. Daniel Rickert leads the way with 5.5, but like Kazim Moore, Mitchell Melton right behind him with 3. I didn't realize Kazim Moore had 3 sacks this season, but I guess he had one against Cal in this one. But the pressure, they've really turned it up, and it's kind of reminiscent of the first season under Radzinski. They were able to get a lot of pressure on the quarterback, and it just hasn't gone that way ever since. But I think the depth of the defensive line, especially now, helps with that.
Yeah, I remember the two of us were sitting there watching early in the season, and there were several opportunities where they looked like they had a quarterback dead to rights in the backfield, let him get away or let him throw the ball away or scramble for a few yards. And it really just seemed like they couldn't get home. They were bringing pressure on quarterbacks, but they couldn't get home. And that's something that's definitely changed as the season has gone on. And it's not necessarily because Radzinski has brought all kinds of elaborate blitzes or pressures from different spots. He's done that at times, kind of very selectively from my vantage point, but he's been able to get home with four or five people rushing the quarterback, and it's come from up the middle, it's come from the edges, it's come from linebackers, occasionally it'll come from a cornerback or a safety. And yeah, I think that's been a really, really important part of UVA's defensive success this year. Because the times in this game where JKS had opportunities to kind of just sit in the pocket, he's a really good passer. He's got great arm talent. And, he did have some passes down the field. He had a couple that probably should have been caught that were pretty good throws that just weren't. But, that he definitely had stretches in this game where he looked very uncomfortable, had to step up in the pocket a lot earlier than he wanted to. And I think that's something that UVA is going to need going forward. Duke coming up, not this week, but their second game remaining, going up against that passing offense, one of the best in the country, they're going to have to be able to put pressure because you can't just sit back and let quarterbacks pick you apart.
That was one of my biggest gripes last week, especially the first half against UNC, is like Gio Lopez is going to give you some balls if you just get his hands in his face. And like there's so much in that first half where like they're rushing three guys or four guys, and I'm just like, get after the quarterback. Like if you just get some pressure, like he's going to make mistakes. And that's kind of what happened towards the end of the game. I'm glad like they were able to get more pressure early on, and they didn't need to blitz a ton. They blitzed smartly in this one. Cam Robinson came home on that one blitz, and like it was really well timed by him on that. Like speaks to the pass rusher that he is. So I think using it smartly, but also realizing like you got to get some pressure in these quarterbacks' faces, and sometimes they'll just gift you the ball. Speaking of gifts, the special teams for Virginia, maybe a few too many gifts for Cal. I'll go through it right now. We don't always talk about special teams, but the unit's been the most consistent unit for Virginia this season. So I'll start off by saying that they have been good for Virginia this year. This game just wasn't their day. Will Bettridge misses a 48-yard field goal. Daniel Sparks, that would have been a career long for him by a yard. Daniel Sparks faked field goal attempt, doesn't quite get there. Short by a yard. Big punt return allowed that helped set up Cal on that fake, the trick play touchdown. And then Daniel Sparks, Probably the biggest one, the shanked 14-yard punt. Overall, concerned, worried, or not concerned about the special teams mistakes on the day?
Well, I think I wouldn't really be a UVA fan if I wasn't just, generally concerned every time special teams is brought up because I think it has been very bad for so long. And of the most impressive turnarounds that Tony Elliott has been able to bring to this program in the last couple of years, it's that their coverage has been really good. They've been able to make field goals pretty consistently. And that kind of stuff sounds like faint praise, but it really isn't because it is an important phase of the game. And I don't think I'm that concerned about it overall. I think, there was, shank punts happen. It was a really long field goal. The one that I'd be interested to get your take on, I didn't love the decision to do the fake field goal. That's one where I feel like at that point in the game, you're up, you take the points. Execution wasn't that bad. You just came a couple feet short, but that was one that I think was a little bit strange. But overall, I don't think I'm super concerned about it. I think there could come a situation where we wish we had a field goal kicker that could make 55 yarders or 60 yarders. It seems like everybody has one of those these days, but Bettridge has been so solid in knocking in anything inside of 40 that I'm not really concerned about that miss.
Yeah, specifically the fake field goal attempt, and I kind of jest like Daniel Sparks was on the freaks list for The Athletic at the beginning of the season. Like he's a good athlete, but I do agree I wouldn't have kind of gone for it there. I wouldn't have done that fake field goal just because I think the points and we look at it towards the end. Yeah, Tony Elliott doesn't have that other fourth down decision to make if he's up six and that puts them up at nine and that kind of seals the game off there. So, yeah, I guess in the end, you kind of really want those points. And so I don't fault him there. I do, at that point in the game, you felt so comfortably up against Cal that you're like, all right, well, let's put the foot on the throat here and try to see if we can get something here. If it worked out, like he's a genius. If it doesn't, people question it like we are right now. That's being a college football coach at the end of the day. But yeah, I wouldn't have done it. I did agree with his other fourth down call on the other side because here's the thing, and I explained this on the post game report afterwards. Like you're up three, getting another three doesn't do anything for you because they win with a touchdown either way. So at this point, you're putting them further back. As far as field starting position, and then like the chance of possibly getting that and then ending the game, that's far more valuable than another 3 points on the board.
Yeah, I know this is not how sports work. You have to just win the totality of the game, but there is a part of my football brain that is just like, if you can win the game by gaining 2 yards, you should do it. I mean, that's the thing. Lane Kiffin had one of those last week where he went for it on his side of the field on his own 22. That's a little much maybe, but I think that's again speaks to the confidence he has in his team, his offensive line, his quarterback who's been around for a long time to kind of make those decisions, but. Yeah, I liked that call. And anytime I think you can, churn out 1 or 2 yards to win a game, I think you should take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't fault them at all for that. Just didn't work out. And, next play, I mean, I guess they called it up, dialed it up perfectly because Cam Robinson had to pick six on the next play anyway. So good play call there. Let's look big picture, looking ahead. UVA now the lone unbeaten team remaining in ACC play to the benefit of your co-host there on the Preferred Walk-Ons as NC State took down Georgia Tech. 5 1-loss teams sitting right below Virginia, who's 5-0 now in the ACC. You got Georgia Tech, Louisville, Duke, SMU, Pitt, all kind of fighting around there. I put some percentages in there. Virginia, according to ESPN's College Football Power Index, you could take it, you can leave it. I know a lot of people want to leave it right now, but 31.2%. To win the ACC, 21.6 is the next closest with Georgia Tech to win the ACC. Basically, it's the UVA's in the driver's seat the rest of the way here in the ACC.
Yeah, and I think they're in a really good spot too. I mean, the ACC is kind of all over the place this year. I don't really know what to make of it. I would have said up until this past weekend that Miami was by far the most talented team, even with their loss against Louisville. And losing that game against SMU really just cemented to me that anything is possible. So if UVA does not take care of business against Wake, things get a lot tougher for them, and it doesn't necessarily matter as much what happens later on. But Yeah, I think a lot of things could happen here. Got some of these teams that are playing each other, which will help UVA. So Georgia Tech plays Pitt. So one of those two teams is going to get another loss. Louisville plays SMU. We've got Duke playing UVA, North Carolina, and Wake to end the season here. So a lot can still happen. And I think Tony Elliott's message to his team is the right one, which is just you got to take care of the game that's directly in front of you.
Yeah.
But as fans, it's tough not to look at that and think, wow, those are three really winnable games. UVA is almost certainly going to be favored against Virginia Tech. The Duke game, maybe they're not favored, but it will be, within a touchdown. And this week, they're a touchdown favorite against Wake Forest and what should be a, hostile environment at Scott Stadium at night. So, yeah, I think everything is definitely in front of them for UVA, but it also is really, it's really chaotic. I don't know what to make of it.
I liked how someone else put it. They thought they got rid of Coastal Chaos, but Coastal Chaos has just permeated the rest of the ACC now and has brought it all on the same level. Yeah, I mean the Wake Forest game, I was surprised by Wake's kind of performance against Florida State, but it seemed like Florida State was just playing like they had to win that game, and they went out there and good for them. Tommy Castellanos, you got an ACC win. Yeah, so Wake Forest, obviously, that's the next big one, but then you got that game at Duke is going to turn out to be a really big game now, and I feel like we've kind of been feeling that for a while now, even after Duke had a loss earlier. It felt like Duke was going to be a big one for this Virginia team if they could kind of continue steady the ship, get through some of these trap games like Cal and UNC, like we just talked about. This ACC race, there's tiebreaker stuff out there already. I'm not ready to look at any tiebreakers until the season's like at its like pinnacle, like at the very end, like because at this point, like it could go any one way in this. Like Miami still has a 1.7% chance of winning the ACC according to ESPN.
Yeah, I don't. I also am kind of in the same headspace as you. I'm not ready to kind of dive into all of this, but if UVA can manage to beat Wake Forest and beat Duke, I don't know that that necessarily clinches it for them to make the ACC championship game. But it would, I mean, it would be pretty close at that point,
Yeah.
given the results that would happen around the league. But the other thing I would say is I think a lot of these teams, a couple of them play each other, but they're also playing some of the teams that are at the bottom of the ACC. So UVA really does need to keep winning. It's not something that they can lose two of these games and expect that they're going to be in the ACC championship based on how everything's going to shake out. I think they're really no more than one loss here in the last three. Obviously, you want to win all three of them, but I think you've got to win this week, and then that Duke game becomes super, super important.
Michael, did you make a preseason win-loss record prediction?
Yeah, well, when I was covering for Sabermetrics on the Saber, I took the over, which was 5.5. I didn't do like a game by game
Okay.
breakdown. I think I had them at like 7 wins overall. So they've already accomplished more than I thought they would.
I was on the high side on our preseason podcast, and I had 8-4 as the record, so I feel great now because it's kind of like Price is Right, so I got the over, and so like this is everything else is gravy for me now. I'm like I'm good. Like I think Jackie and Greg both went with like the 7-5, and I went 8-4. So I'm just gonna toot my own horn there. Glad you're on because this has been a fun topic on social media the last couple days. Is I saw someone had a tweet about. I think it was a referencing the Florida Georgia game about like the SEC's like one of the bottom teams like almost beating one of the better teams, like that's a sign of the strength of the SEC. Whereas like for years we've been told that like all the competition in a conference and the chaos, that's a sign of weakness in like the ACC and Big 12. So I'll put it to you, ACC chaos, is it a strength or is it a weakness this year?
Do you mean for perceptions of the conference?
Yeah,
Because,
like
yeah.
is I guess I'm saying like is the chaos because like it is a stronger ACC this year, or is it because no one's that good and everyone's just kind of beating up each other?
Yeah, I've kind of evolved my thinking on this over the season. I think about a month ago, I was advocating really strongly for the ACC that there were a lot of good teams, or like not necessarily elite. like Indiana, Ohio State, Oregon level teams. But I thought Miami was really strong. I thought Louisville was really strong. I think I have to adjust that a little bit. I think there are a bunch of above average teams, and I think the numbers, if people don't necessarily like the analytics, the numbers kind of shape out that way. I mean, you have UVA, Bill Connolly, who does SB Plus for ESPN. He had UVA as like his 42nd or 43rd best team in the country right now. I know that will make a lot of Virginia fans angry to hear that, given the 8-1 record. But if you just kind of look at the analytics, that's where he places them. Games coming up: Wake Forest is 68th, Duke is 47th, Virginia Tech is 86th. I'm sure a lot of Virginia fans think that that number, they're not going to feel like they're the 86th best team when they come to town, given the history. But all of that is to say, I think there are a lot of just kind of mid to average to maybe above average teams in the ACC. So I think the perception is bad. I think the perception across the country is bad. And maybe that's not fair, because I like to be in a conference where anything can happen any given week, and there are a lot of really solid teams. You don't want teams that are just complete bottom feeders in the bottom half. But I think it's fair to say the conference, even though I stand for them all the time on our podcast, I think this conference is going to struggle. And, ultimately, I think the bottom line for UVA is it's going to be tough for UVA, Louisville, Duke, Miami, any of these teams to convince the committee that they belong in the college football playoff as an at-large team beyond that team that ultimately wins the championship.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that though is like kind of predestined before the season because the ACC comes in with a reputation like that already. So that's why you're going to see schools like Virginia, like if they don't win the ACC championship, like ACC championship, it's going to be a tough call on if they can get into that 12-team pool. I would like to point out, however, that one team went into this weekend in the ACC winless in conference play, but beat the best so-called best team in the SEC to start off the season, and speaking of Florida State and Alabama. So I'm just like, I mean, like I don't know. Like I don't think the SEC is as good as it's been touted in recent years. Like I think they have fallen off tremendously. Like I think the Big Ten is really rock solid at the top this year. You talk about, the Ohio State and Indiana and Oregon and all that bunch. But yeah, I think the SEC is falling back a little bit, and that's probably because like we're seeing right now with schools like Virginia and Texas Tech and all these other programs going up, like it's a little bit more of an even playing field. Like if you can get the money to cobble together and put a roster together and have, some decent coaching out there and whatnot, like a good quarterback, like you can go places right now in this college football landscape. Last
Yeah,
thing on
and
the F, go
I was just
ahead.
going to say, to your point about parity, I mean, I think, that's definitely true. You're seeing a lot of teams that you wouldn't normally see compete. Vanderbilt is become a perennial powerhouse in the SEC when they were a doormat for so long. But yeah, I think overall the perception, early in the season that the ACC was back was kind of unfairly pictured by the media, because it was the brand names. It was Clemson, it was Miami, it was Florida State. And that's not fair, I think. I mean, people want to ignore Georgia Tech. They obviously lost yesterday, but I think they're still a really, really good team. And so I think there are good teams. Virginia's clearly playing good football right now. Duke is playing some of its best football of the season. SMU just won against Miami. I think Miami still has the most talented roster, top to bottom, of any team in the ACC. But yeah, I
But
mean,
they're just coached by Mario Cristobal.
He's going to slip on a banana peel at some point. You just don't know when. It's going to happen.
Last thing on the FBI, because I know a lot of people are making fun of it today, because in their top 25 for the FBI, you've got three teams that have already fired their coach in Penn State, LSU, and Florida. Another one, I was Auburn in? I don't know if Auburn was in there, but like, I'm just like, are you even paying attention? Like Penn State hadn't has not. I was shocked to find out they still have not beaten a Power Four opponent this season. I couldn't believe that. I had to go double check that when I saw someone make that say that point. But last thing to wrap up: UVA hosting Wake Forest Saturday, 7 p.m. on ESPN. So, in an age where you get a little bit of extra revenue share based on how many people watch your game, it's good to be on the big network on ESPN for Virginia this weekend. ACC Huddle is in town. I know it's not College Game Day. I think you made the point that you'd rather have Taylor Tannenbaum than Nick Saban?
Yeah, a friend of our podcast, Taylor
Yeah,
Tannenbaum.
absolutely.
I'm excited to have her and the crew back in town. I think that's still exciting,
It
and I think,
is.
you know, I think it was always a little bit of a pipe dream, and you know, ESPN has an agenda that they're also pushing that is unrelated to what is the best game or necessarily even the best story. And that's not to take away from BYU or Texas Tech, because I think both of those are deserving teams that are playing great football right now. But I think it was always a little bit of a pipe dream to have that happen. And you know, I think the real way to get that to happen, you know, Vanderbilt was good last year and then backed it up with a second good year and
Yeah.
got to host game day the next year. I think really that's the path that's more realistic for Virginia fans is let's finish out this season strong. Let's maybe make the ACC championship or, you know, sneak into the college football playoff. And then what can you do next year to kind of back up that
Sure.
story? And I think that is when ESPN and the big networks and all the other things, they start to pay attention when you're more of a brand than just kind of one season.
That being said, I do know it was at least under consideration from ESPN. Like it, they calls were made, you know, as contingency plans go, because it's kind of a crazy thing that they do of like, you know, in a week, like kind of transport their whole show and set up and get all this other stuff set up around it, you know, all the interviews and all this stuff that kind of goes into a college game day and setting up on a campus and everything. So the calls were made, but yeah, I think they were waiting on that Texas Tech. As long as Texas Tech beat Kansas State, like it's hard to beat that BYU Texas Tech game on the schedule this week. But Virginia definitely one of the better stories in college football going right now, and none better to talk about it here than us two right here, right?
Yeah, it's been an absolutely thrilling year as a Virginia fan. I have not seen the excitement level like this since I was a student during the Al Groh years, early 2000s, and we would have 60,000 people in the stadium. I know that seems like an impossibility now. Maybe we'll see it this week with Wake Forest coming into town, or maybe later in the year with Virginia Tech, but there were times where that happened very frequently, and there was a lot of excitement and Matt Schaub at quarterback, and we're starting to feel that way. It's the first time, even the Bryce Perkins year, that it felt kind of like a flash in the pan 1 year under Bronco Mendenhall. And I feel like now this is the first time that you've really seen that fan excitement, student excitement, and kind of belief that goes beyond just the true hardcore UVA fans. I think it's kind of permeating into the community at this point.
Yeah, I had a plea last week after the North Carolina game. Like, just enjoy the season, guys. It's been a fun ride already. It's much better than the last couple seasons that we've had to cover, and some other ones beyond that. But it's been good talking about it here. We've got men's basketball starting up. This podcast comes out on Monday morning. They'll have their season opener on Monday evening against Rider, start of the Ryan Odom era. So that'll be something to talk about in the coming weeks. Obviously, I'll talk about that on the Who's On post-game report after that game against Rider as they kick off the Ryan Odom era. But plenty to come on football as we get through this week here on the Who's On podcast. As always, you can check us out on YouTube, on Apple, on Spotify. Michael, when do y'all have your podcast coming out?
We are going to probably have one up on Tuesday, later this week. You know, that'll be our normal football preview. We do a preview of every ACC game coming up, which is going to be really important for UVA fans as they start thinking about those permutations we talked earlier. And then later this week, we're also going to be doing our college basketball preview with a special guest who
Oh, nice.
specializes in North Carolina basketball. So we're going to ask him some tough, probing questions about Hubert Davis and what that looks like this year.
It's crazy that it's here and now trying to balance a good football team with the start of basketball season. Not something that we're used to having to try to balance here, but Who's On podcast this past week, we did our season preview with Cuts and Zach, and you can also see had an interview with Terrence Oglesby from Field of 68 and ESPN previewing the season. So if you got some time before tip off tonight, between the Cavaliers and Ryder, give any of that stuff a listen, and listen throughout the week. Preferred walk-ons, anything on the Sabre Podcast Network. We got it all going on. But that's going to do for the Who's On Podcast. We'll see you later in the week.